Lord.
Hello, Muji. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, what I understand is that you are moving now to Portugal.
Yes, we are in Portugal right now.
And you are founding something like Muji Land?
Who said that? Muji Land.
I believe.
No, it's not. We found a beautiful place here in Portugal, and the original name of the land is Foladas, but we felt to call the place Monte Sahaja, which means the mountain of the natural state of being. So, yeah, so if people say, if somebody said, oh, Muji's land, maybe just, it's not called that, so that's where I am. I would not call anything like that.
I do not know who did it. I believe I read it somewhere on the web, so...
I don't know what it is.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And what are the plans there? So you are founding an ashram or something like that?
We don't really call it out loud an ashram. I refer to it as an ashram because just to kind of set people's mind in the right frame, so that they know that it's not really a kind of like a holiday place or you know, a kind of hippie colony or something like this. I say it's come as though you are coming to an ashram. Then I think it strikes the right tone and the right chord for many people. They have a sense that an ashram is a place more like a kind of monastery or something. There's nothing so strict, but I feel... It's important because we are not really the focus here is really on satsang, and we have been for so long traveling around the world, and we really never had a home in this kind of way. We were our home, and I felt it was good to have a place where people could come and really be immersed in this type of space and with this concentration on satsang and focus on truth. So it starts like that, and it's at the very early stages of it, so we are still in a kind of camping situation, mostly some caravans, some camps, some tents and so on, and but you know, it's, I feel perhaps it's the best time. Every day is like the best time somehow.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
So this will be more, you will be spending most of your time there and will be available for satsang and meeting with people.
I am hoping so. I feel really a bit exhausted from traveling so much. Mm. It was brought to my attention that in the last 6 years of traveling, I've only not traveled for 3 months. And that's a lot for me.
Yes.
And I don't have a natural enthusiasm for traveling, so I'm quite happy being at home. So
yes.
I felt this is a good, perhaps this would be the place where people could come and, mm-hmm. and come for a visit if they felt like it, and slow down on the going out from my side.
And is everything organization-wise under control so far, or are you facing particular problems at the moment still?
There are challenges that come because we came here. It's actually, when we first came here, we were told by the local architect that we had, you know, a good amount of room to build and so on. But then, you know, almost a year later, we were told that, no, actually, this is a national reserve, and it's not like that. We cannot do that. But we are not panicking about that, because I know that somehow I have to use the word that I felt like we were brought here somehow, you know. Okay. It was not a forceful entry. I've not really been looking for a place actively.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that this whole situation fell into our laps, and whatever brought it about has got to kind of carry it further on.
Okay. So I believe now we are coming closer to the subject. So what is the core of your teaching or the core of your attitude towards life?
What is the core of my teaching and attitude towards life? First of all, I would say that what we are searching for is no distance from where we are. It is not located elsewhere. If we say that the truth, you know, in its most purest form is what we're seeking, then it is right here where we are. It is the core of our own being. And that all that has to be understood is really how it came about that such a misunderstanding or misplacement of our identity ended up being embedded only in the mental and physical aspect of ourself, and how that itself brought about kind of confusion, misconception, misunderstanding. And just that has to be seen through deeply in the heart, and everything becomes clear. This is it. So we are what we are seeking. If by truth we mean our timeless nature, our perfect nature, I'm starting off like that. That this is not an assumption for me. This is something that it's obvious. And that is a truth for everyone. Behind all the facade of different expressions as different beings is this common ground. And I am directing the attention to that. And when that is recognized, immediately, yes, it puts an end to the suffering condition and that kind of mindset, which seems to be frozen into a kind of a fearful posture, you know, about life. So I would put it like that. And so I think you asked, what is my essential core teaching or something, if you want to put. I even don't want to stress that it's so much a teaching, you know. I prefer to say that this is what I am pointing out. I'm pointing it out. Because I make the distinction, because teaching often requires someone learning something. And I don't think the truth can be learned. I felt it has to be directly perceived, has to be directly experienced. It has to be that which is beyond any doubt. It cannot be something believed in. It has to be our confirmed and convincing truth, irrefutable truth. I stand like this.
So you would not really call you a teacher?
I don't want to put any labels upon myself.
Okay.
You see? I don't find I do not reject that label. Sometimes it can be useful to say like this. I don't have an issue with it, but I wouldn't go as far as to say this is what I am. Because when someone learns something from me, they may regard me as a teacher. When they see directly what I'm pointing, they may wish to call me something else or nothing. I don't know. I leave it up to them. I don't want to insist on any labels for myself.
I mean, when it is seen, then it's over. Huh? I mean,
well, yes, there's a kindness in the seeing.
Yes.
There's no arrogance in the seeing. There's no cynicism in the seeing. Because it is really a revelation of timeless harmony. It doesn't have to be busy pushing anything aside anymore. Someone coming.
I sometimes have the impression that all drama is created just by the functioning of the brains or whatever it is. Huh? Thoughts are playing around, and ideas of what is right and wrong are somehow believed, and then the drama starts.
It is unavoidable in the beginning, because it was a move of consciousness in the first place to extend itself into the belief that it is the body-mind and the body-mind's functioning. I don't think any single human being can be responsible for that. The human being, anyway, I have said that human being is itself an expression of consciousness. Human being is not the managers of consciousness. They are not the rulers of consciousness. They are themselves a form that consciousness assume. So they are not the sentient core. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So only when the consciousness, which is pure and not personal, somehow I call it like extends itself in the modification and the belief that it is the body and it is the mind functioning, then there comes the belief, I am this body, I am this particular body of a man or a woman, and the conditioning, social conditioning, religious conditioning, all of these gets piled into and upon that root belief, I am this person, I am this form. Then all the other play, the full range of interrelated opposites and their functioning can come alive in front of that core belief. This is what we would say is what we call life, and a life of continuous change, the realm of the relative. And somehow it seems that we are excited by this changefulness, but we also suffer from it, because something inside us comes to a time when we are seeking only rest. And it seems that if we are only aware, or think we are only aware of the relative state, then there's a fear that beyond the relative there's nothing. And so great effort is spent to try and find some ultimate or absolute state within the relative, which is impossible, you see.
It's paradox.
yes, for it's a paradox for as long as we retain identity. Yes.
You mean identity as separate individuals, or?
Yes. The identity that I am this body mind. I am my own autonomy. I am the director of my own life. I am the doer of my actions and the thinker of my thoughts. As long as that identity persists, so the delusion will persist.
So, but saying I am consciousness is also some kind of identity, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, to say I am consciousness as a statement of identity is not enough. If to say I am consciousness as a revelation, as an outcome of directly seeing, not a preaching, not a mantra, but an affirmation, a verification, a recognition, this is fine. Mm-hmm. To recognize that I cannot be other than consciousness, and that the forms that appear in consciousness, they all relate to me as consciousness. I am the perceiver of them. But yes, that would be, I would say, the opportunity of the human existence to come to that essential recognition that I cannot be an object appearing inside my own consciousness. Something like that.
Yeah. How often does it happen that such revelations happen to people you meet?
I think the revelation happens quite frequently. You're asking how often does that revelation happen to people that I meet. I think it happens very often. It happens very often, but somehow it falls out of the mouth. It happens very often, but somehow it seems that as soon as that recognition occurs, there is a rush, a tsunami of tendencies and thoughts and come in and appears to sabotage the seeing. Lots of doubts come. Doubts come very forcefully, that, you know, such as, you know, how will I live, and how with this understanding, first of all, it can come, but nothing is real. Nothing is really true in the way that it was previously perceived. Nothing of that is true. Nothing is stable. You know, what is the point to all of this? Sometimes this is coming up, but that's not the expression of truth itself. Sometimes this is still, the mind is still there. In some aspect of the mind is still there, and it is saying, but you know, but nothing makes sense. Nothing is real. And we are believing this, but that's just somehow a burning off of some of suppressed energies now coming in the reverse. Somehow, the other extreme is coming up. First of all, everything was meaningful. Then suddenly, nothing is meaningful. But they are both aspects of the mind. Initially, you see, they come up like that. So therefore, I say to people, please be careful. Don't be too quick to make conclusions about what is appearing for you. Stay only as that neutral seeing. Observe without just judging or claims or any kind of conclusion. Live as though you're only your eyes, if you can, because the strongest assault is going to come for you. Every doubt, even those that you have never been totally conscious about, they will start to come to the surface to cast some doubt upon your seeing. Such as I've started saying before, you know, how will I manage? Who's going to live? How can I live? And, you know, how can I stay like this? And, you know, my life has no meaning. How will I relate to other beings? All of these doubts will come. They will come up. And if we don't hold inside the seeing itself confirmed, just as that space of awareness itself, and you take a bite into these thoughts, then you will get pulled, the attention will get pulled in, and then somehow a fragmentation is the result of that pulling in, and the sense that I lost this will come again fully. And so it will be counting as another experience that happened and passed away. It can be like this. So I would say a large number of people are spontaneously also coming into that recognition. And when I say spontaneously, I mean people who have not been deliberately practicing anything sometimes. Sometimes it comes about because life simply unfold in the form of maybe a kind of crisis can happen for people. Maybe the passing away of a loved one or an accident or something like that can be enough of a trigger to shake the mind out of its complacency or a sense of, you know, its comfort zone or something, and may just trigger a deeper introspection, and that can continue just a gradual melting down or deconstruction of our thought processes and our identified projections and so on. It can come like that also, you see.
I have a little bit of suspicion that somehow our systems seem to know that they are programmed by conditionings and the life experience, and the system knows it. And there are occasions or situations in life when it is remembered that it's just programming that is driving us and driving the beliefs.
Yes.
These glimpses.
Yes. Yes, you say that, that it seems that there is some inbuilt knowingness that we're living a kind of programmed existence up to a certain point, and that maybe the interest we have for this, because it's not just something happening to us and we are totally innocent. It's very much mixed in. The whole flavors are mixed in. It's partly we are also participating and feeling an attraction for that playground of consciousness also. Something is excited by it, and for a while, I don't see anything wrong. I think it's
nothing wrong with it.
From that level, we can call it a kind of journey, a slow refining of consciousness that has to pass through more grosser states, where it is only the belief that I am this body and nothing else, and all the the way that life will taste wearing those glasses, how to look. And so for a time it seems unavoidable, inevitable like that. Then some power is seemingly pulling the consciousness towards a higher state of realization of, or pulling it towards what I would call ultimate state of truth. That may seem to be slow, and some people have said this is going on for hundreds of thousands of lifetimes. It can be said like this. If it doesn't suit us like that, we don't have to bother with it. It's not a prerequisite for freedom to believe such things. Only that somehow, whatever we are feeling deeply about, it's not stable. None of it is stable. You see, and that there is some force inherent in life that seems to be in an evolutionary drive towards something more pure and more wholesome, harmonious, I would say like that. But not everybody agrees with that type of statement.
I'm not sure. It seems to be some... it's difficult to put it into words, and it is a lot of speculation with any word that I could use. There seems to be a tendency or some desire for peace for many.
It fluctuates. It's not a consistent desire for peace. Sometimes there's a desire for excitement. There's a desire for, you know, even for disharmony even. At a conscious or subconscious level, there's a desire for being something, for playing through different identities. They're all different types of desires that we are experiencing. I say underlying all of that, maybe there's must be a desire for happiness or something. That I believe all beings, not just human beings, have a propensity or a desire for happiness.
It seems for me, this seems to be like a built-in property, which is built into every living being. Somehow,
yes.
This keeps us alive.
If joy
would not exist, why to live then? I think it's a very, very fundamental property of living.
Yes. Sometimes we try to substitute it with power or fame. Or relationships, but when it all boils down, we can just say that the impulse in life is to be happy, to be in a state of joy and peace, you can say like this. But it's not always clear that if we follow the outer behavior of human beings, that this is the case, like it's a search for peace or joy. Sometimes the grip of selfishness is seemingly so strong that it doesn't seem that one could really be searching for peace or joy in the way that I would put it.
So the simplest would be to just be as the some kind of a perceiving or a seeing without action.
It takes a while. There's no one who can make that decision, you know, I mean, in a truthful way. It has to be some inner processes going on, I use the word grace. Some people are not comfortable with that, but we call it grace. Inexplicable. The mind turns away from the transient, and is pulled into a deeper, more unified field. Sometimes like this, I would say.
What about calling? Sorry.
Gradually, this state, because so strong sometimes is the conditioning, and perhaps the most deepest conditioning is the belief I am the body. And until that is tackled somehow, the delusions will persist. There may be evolution or maturing inside the deluded state even, But finally, it must be transcended, this belief that I am only the body, because it gives rise to such distortion, such, you know.
It has to be protected, it has to be improved.
This is where the sense of vulnerability came, because consciousness is not the body, and when it enters into a belief, I am the body, then fear is going to come, the fear, because it sees that bodies are vulnerable to pain and suffering and to death. Then if it has really formed identification with the body, it will going to feel, well, I am also going to die. So then this vulnerability, this fear comes, this fierce, you know, energy to protect life from harm, from discomfort, from illness, from suffering, all of this come. When you are again in your natural state of unmixed awareness, this fear is not there.